Our next speaker is really nervous because I told her I was going to come up here and tell all the dirt on her. So, but no, really, I've known Michelle now for a couple years, and I've become really close friends with her. She's a great person. I want you to meet Michelle from Parkersburg.
Nervous does not explain how nervous I am. Petrified comes close. I'm not good at talking in front of people. As a matter of fact, I'm using all you people right now at this very minute. I have this fear of talking to more than five people at once because I'm afraid of anything and everything you guys could possibly think about me. So right now, with your will, I am using you to get rid of my fears. My name is Michelle McDonough, and I'm one of these sick people who didn't need alcohol to rant and rave and act like an insane person. I only had to live with them. let's see, I just don't know where to start. My family, I don't like the word dysfunctional family because I've yet to see a family that isn't dysfunctional. But if you had to have a top 10 list of the top 10 dysfunctional families, mine would be in there. I was born in Parkersburg. I've lived in Parkersburg all my life. And it's a little town. It's not a little town, but it is a little town. And everybody knows what goes on around you. They know. I mean, they just know. We always tried to hide what was going on, and it never worked. It never worked. No matter how hard we tried, it never worked. I'm one of these lucky people who asked to remember as much as they could about their childhood, and I now regret it. I wanted to know exactly why I felt the way I did, why I carried so many resentments around about. First of all, it was my father. My father, when I grew up, was the only person who was an alcoholic that I knew of at the time. And my mom and my grandma pounded a lot of resentments into me, and then I got my own resentments to go along with it. I have a younger brother and a younger sister. Well, younger, it's opposite order, but who cares? Jeez, I'm nervous. when I was little, it was bad. I mean, it isn't, it's never good. But I immediately was forced to grow up quick, and I was constantly watching over my brother and my sister. My mom would come in, and we all shared, at this time we were living with my grandma. We lived in like three different houses before I was probably 3 years old. And all of them seemed to be centrally located around bars. Of course, and we were living with my grandma, and me, my brother, and my sister were all in the same room. And at night, when things would get bad, and my mom and dad would start to argue, and my grandma would get into it, I would take my sister and put her in my father had this huge crib, and me and my sister both went through it, and we'd all get in there, and I'd sit here and hold these two little brats. And, I mean, I was more scared than they were. They didn't know what was going on, but unfortunately I did. I never knew that my dad was an alcoholic. I just knew that he would go down to this place over the hill, and when he came back, he wasn't the same person who left. And I noticed my mom was getting sicker and sicker every minute. The only thing I remember about the houses we lived in before my grandma was my mom walking around and crawling on the floor in a nightgown. A lot of times we ate peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and watched the Brady Bunch every day, and that was the highlight of my day for who knows how long. When we moved in with my grandma was working at Dill's, and so my grandma and my dad were gone all day, and it was just me, my mom, and my brother and sister in this house. And my mom hated this house because she had grown up there, and my grandma Well, let's just call my grandma. I love her to death, but let's call my grandma Valium Lady. Valium was her best friend, and she loved it dearly. She would go to work, and depending on how bad the fight had been the night before with my mom and my dad and my grandma, because my grandma couldn't keep her mouth shut and stay out of it, because, I mean, who can? They were always all three at it. It would never be a fight where none of them were in it. And in the meantime, I had already sat down. I was like watching a movie. I'd sit here on this floor and watch these three people who looked totally insane argue. And it was just like watching a movie. I didn't feel anything. I didn't like the movie. It was like watching a war movie or something, but I didn't feel anything from it. And that was weird. And I didn't like it even then. Oh, jeez. I remember a lot of times we used to have, back then, they had a milkman. And the milkman would come and bring those little glass jars. And it had orange juice and milk in it. And I'd live for that milkman to come. Because that was the only time during the day that my mom would actually get up and go and try to act presentable in front of these people. And this guy would say hi, and you get to play with the little bottles and everything, and they thought you were so cute and adorable, because here was these people giving me attention, just what I wanted, more and more attention. And I mean, I get up and watch Batman. That was my other highlight of the day. I love that show. I think it was because there was these people that were, there was violence there, and there wasn't the screaming and the yelling. I hated it when I went to school, because even from the first day I went to school, I wondered about what was going on with my mom while she was at home. I immediately became a caretaker. I was always constantly worried about my mom, because I had to protect her from this big, bad alcoholic. Yeah, right. And I was always worrying about my brother and my sister. And it was so weird. It was such a double standard life. My mom and my grandma would take us down to, my grandma worked at Dill's, and so she knew almost everybody down there. And we'd go down there, and we'd have to put on dresses and fix our hair and act like that's the kind of life we live. Far from it. And we'd go down here, and it was like heaven, because nobody would make a scene there. Nobody would yell at you there. And there's these people that are being nice to you, and they weren't being nice to you because they felt they owed it to you. And that was really weird. I never had felt people come up to me and talk to me and be nice to me and show me attention as a little kid and not have guilt, have it be guilt-driven. I don't remember a lot, but I remember a lot of the fights. And it wasn't before too long that I was getting in them, yelling and screaming, telling them to stop. And it soon around came along that for a long time, I would just yell and scream and get the attention off of them so that they couldn't fight amongst each other. They'd be yelling and screaming at me, and it'd end quicker, because all I'd have to do is run off then, and they wouldn't know what to say. I used to hide from my parents. I'd hide myself in the washer and the dryer and underneath my bed. I tried to hide in the closet, but the closet was too big. I couldn't find enough stuff to hide in there. Soon after that, I started to notice that my mom was starting to act like my dad used to when he was drinking. Along this time, my dad did get sober, and he's been sober for 13 years now. I'm very proud of him. And she started to act really weird. And we went to his New Year's Eve party my sixth grade year. And she was drunk. I mean, she was, if you ever watch a movie and you see people at New Year's Eve parties and there's always the drunk one stumbling around, there was my mom. I was like, oh, hi, Mom. And I didn't know what to do. I had never seen her drunk before. I'd never seen her act this way before. And I was, like, amazed. And she went on and off going out and drinking and then not staying and then staying sober. And she was going to Al-Anon meetings at the time. And by this time, I was being drugged to go to Alateen meetings, and I was sitting in the corner not listening to a word. And if I did listen to a word, I used it, twisted it, so I could use it as a weapon against them when they started to yell. Soon after this, my mom admitted to me that she was an alcoholic. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't know who to resent. I didn't know who to hate. I didn't know what to feel towards these people. Because here, my mom had told me that my dad was an alcoholic. And immediately all the resentment started there. And so I thought, he was the bad guy. Of course, he's the alcoholic. Well, now I had two of them. Who am I going to blame? I mean, that's the first question that ran through my head. Junior high came along and I loved it because I got out of the house more. I didn't sit around and mope as much, but I worried constantly about what was going on in my house once I left, and my grades showed it. I've always been real interested in sports, and so I loved it because I could go out there and I could play basketball, and I loved the sport, but I could also get so much rage out from pounding that ball on that floor. And I used every little bit of that rage. And I mean, everybody always wondered why I'd be so zonked out after a game. And it's like, well, I just got rid of about 3 years of resentments right there. Actually, I didn't. It just got the rage out. I started to, instead of going to school to learn, I went to school to hide from what was going on at my house. And that didn't work. People started to ask questions why my grades were dropping, telling me you should be doing better than this. And I was still going to ALA team meetings, but I was still using what I wanted to hear when I wanted to hear it. But I was getting these little messages. It just does a lovely thing for you. When you don't want to get help, it still gives you these little messages. And I was getting these little messages like, find a higher power. Well, I grew up in a Catholic home where you went to Sunday school every day. And these nuns didn't like our higher power, I'll tell you that. And these nuns had me scared half to death when I was going to die. I mean, I was rotten. I mean, I thought I was a wonderful kid, but I was rotten. I went and stirred up trouble everywhere I could go, and then blame it on my brother and sister. I was always trying to people-please everybody. I was this little kid, built up with rage and resentment, going around trying to please everybody. And when I didn't get pleased from trying to please these other people, this little brat got madder. And she carried around with her because she didn't know how to deal with it. When I was in junior high, I started hanging out with the wrong kind of people. And it's funny because people say in junior high their parents started to let them wear makeup. Well, I started to wear makeup to hide the black eyes I was getting from my boyfriends. So my parents want to find out. Yes, me, I went and found every bum, every drunk, every drug addict, and went out with them. And if they weren't a bum or a drug addict or an alcoholic, I didn't want them. I knew how they'd react. I knew the sick games they played, and it was common to me, and I didn't want to find something different. When I got into junior high, I got so desperate not to hurt anymore that I tried drinking and using some drugs, and it didn't work. I saw these people getting sick around me. I saw these people giving everything they got for a drink, and I didn't want to be like that. I didn't want to be scraping myself off the ground for a drink. I thought I could be more than that. And that's where ALA team had been giving me these little messages, thank God. And so I stopped that. I stopped hanging around with those people, and I stopped doing stuff like that, and I have not went and done stuff like that since then. I went, in my eighth grade year, I went to ALA team meetings, and I started to really go because I was starting to open up a little bit, and I was starting to find something there. I mean, new people knew why I felt the way I did. You people understand why I would go to sleep and have a headache and be so enraged from what was going on and wake up and still feel the same way and want to sleep some more. You people understood why I didn't want to be in my home and why I didn't want to live anymore half the time. And that's one thing I had thought about was killing myself, but I'm one of these people who can't stand needles, can't stand the sight of blood, and can't stand to take pills, so That ended that real quick. My junior high years went by pretty quick. And the only thing I really learned is that I didn't want to be like the people I had hung around with. My 10th grade year started and I was I was happy. I was playing basketball for the high school, the only high school in Parkersburg, PHS. No. I was playing a game against our arch rival, and my knee gave out on me. And I'd had knee problems and ankle problems all along because I was constantly in sports, constantly trying to find something to give me an adrenaline rush. That's all it was. And my knee gave out on me, and I couldn't walk. I couldn't crawl. I couldn't move. And I was in shock. Here had been my only way to get out this rage, and it got taken away from me in nighttime flat. I ended up going and having surgery in Morgantown, and I found out later that I had ripped my ligament away from my bone and that I was going to have to learn how to walk all over again. And I was scared. I didn't want to move. I didn't want to take care of myself. I just wanted something to happen to me so I wouldn't have to deal with this. And it wasn't that bad. The main reason I was scared is because I didn't know how to deal with my anger. I never had, and I didn't want to, because I didn't want to look at myself that well and see my character defects and see where it wasn't all my parents' fault for what had been happening to me. And around this time, my little brother went from we used to call him Muffin Head when he was a little kid because he had this head shaped like a muffin. Well, my little Muffin Head went from Muffin Head to Pothead, and that hurt. I had never seen anybody go like that. It touched me majorly. Here, me and my brother, we isolated my sister. We looked alike. Everybody thought we were twins, and my sister does not look like anything that we do. So we made her life hell. We cut on her constantly. We used to put toothpaste through all her clothes and her hair. And I mean, we used to do sick stuff, and then we'd say that she did it in her sleep. I mean, and but he had turned diabetic sometime before that too, and I was scared that this drugs and alcohol were going to take my little muffin head away from me. And I had to look at myself, and I had to let him go, and I didn't want to, and it took me a long time to do that. And I went up to Columbus to see this boy in treatment, and I was like, what is my 13-year-old brother doing here? Why is he here? How could he have a drug and alcohol problem? How could this happen to my brother? Why couldn't it have been me? I had always said that. When my brother turned diabetic, I was like, why does it have to happen to him? Why can't it happen to me? Anytime anything happened to my brother and sister, I wanted it to happen to me. And I would get into fights with my dad on purpose so he cannot hit my mom or my brother and sister. And they weren't that violent sometimes. And after a while, my mom got sick and tired of me jumping in the fights, and she started hitting me for it. And the thing that used to bug me is my mom would sit here and she'd tell me, and it happened all the time with other people, even my family too. She'd tell me how dirty I was and how all I ever did was cause trouble. And that if I would stop getting in the middle of my fights, her and Dad could have a better relationship. And then when I bring something up about this, she wouldn't remember it. And I was like, what? What? You cannot remember what you just told me last night. And little did I realize that she would get so angry and so frustrated that she would black out. And after I realized that she'd been blacking out from being so angry and enraged, I found out I had. And I had blacked out a lot of what I thought I hadn't. And I got scared. I came to a time, I'm going to backtrack a little bit, I was in junior high, and I blacked out 3 weeks of my life, and came back and found out that I had stole a TV and a VCR off of one of my best friends, found out that I had went and was drinking every night so that people could have more money to go party on the next night, and I had found out that I had been in a fight with somebody and actually pulled a knife on them, and that scared me because I didn't know how mad I was. I didn't remember pulling the knife. I don't even know where I got the knife from. I'd always had the knives pulled out on me. I never pulled the knife, and that scared me. I was more scared when I pulled the knife than when somebody held it to my throat for 3 hours, and I've always been scared of myself, and when I realized I had blacked out stuff, I got even more scared. And a lot of this came to me when I was sitting in this hospital bed in Morgantown, wanting only for this nightmare to end. And I had this lady, she was a nurse, and I woke up from recovery and I thought I was dead. I had tubes in my nose and all these beepers beeping, and I was like, I'm dead. I'm just dying. But of course I wasn't. And she comes over to me and she goes, what are you so scared of? And I looked up at her and I didn't even think. And I said, living. And she looked at me with the most puzzled look on her face. And here it was, a 15-year-old kid was scared to live. And she didn't understand that. And this lady came back to my room and she talked to me later. And I found out this lady's husband was an alcoholic. And this lady came to me and she goes, do your parents have drug and alcohol problems? I said, yes, they do. She goes, is there any other family members that do? And I go, well, my brother is, and about any cousin, uncle, aunt, or anything like that that you can find of mine is one too. And I was being really sarcastic, and she goes, you too, huh? And I was like, yeah. And this lady would talk to me, but I was too afraid for her, my mom, to know she was talking to me, because I didn't know how she'd react. And so whenever my mom would go on her walks each day to get out of my little room, which was about as big as all it could fit in there was a bed and a chair. And I would sit there and I'd talk to this lady. And this lady got me to open up and she got me to look at myself. And they finally took this IV out of my arm because I stopped puking every time I put food in my mouth. And I had to try to walk on crutches. And I didn't want to. I tried to tell them I was sick, I was going to barf. They go, well, walk till you barf. And I did. I'd walk a couple steps and barf, and they'd let me barf, and they'd go, get your butt back up. And I was like, what? And if they wouldn't have done that, I probably wouldn't have got my butt back up. So I'm glad they did. And I started to walk on these crutches. 2 days later, I went back home, and I was scared. I went home, and I tried to act like nothing had happened to me. I was the exact same person as when I left, that I wasn't scared, that I wasn't afraid to walk or anything. And that's the main thing. I thought I would never walk again. I was convinced that I wouldn't because I convinced myself that because I've been so scared. And I started getting desperate because I needed some way to get this rage out. And I sure as hell wasn't going to talk about it. So I started to do my physical therapy. And I did my physical therapy so much that I almost ripped my ligament again. And I finally started to walk again, and I was amazed. As soon as I could walk, I was like amazed. I was like, okay, I'm not going to be incapable of taking care of myself. I can walk. Well, then they tell me that I can't go out and be this free person, that I have to live according to how they say for a period of time, or else I'll be back where I started. And if anybody tells me I can't do something, I'm going to go do it. So I went and did everything I wasn't supposed to do and everything I was supposed to do at the same time so I could cover it up. And they sort of noticed. But I did get better and I was able to run again, and I had my rage get her out or back. But once I got this brace, they call me RoboCop now because I look like half man, part machine. And it wasn't the same. I couldn't get the rage out like I wanted to. It wasn't going anywhere. And about this time, I looked at myself, and I looked in this mirror, and I hated who I saw. I saw this person who didn't know who they were, didn't like who they were, and just really wanted to crawl into a hole. And I didn't want to die because then I'd have to kill myself, and I couldn't do that. I just wanted to crawl into a hole. And I really started to get depressed. And I missed a lot of school, and my grades were down from my knee surgery. And I got to the point where I was only getting out of bed to go to the bathroom and get something to drink. And then I'd go back to bed and I'd sleep for another 14 hours. And every morning my mom, poor thing, would come in and try to wake me up to get me to go to school. She'd try yelling at me because telling me that I couldn't go to school, hoping that I'd do the opposite and get up and go, and I wouldn't. Instead, all I did was pull the covers over my head and yelled at her until she got so physically exhausted, she said, lay there, see if I care. And I must have laid in that bed in the same clothes for 3 weeks before I decided that I needed to do something about it. And I went down on my porch, I got dressed, and I took a bath and put some clean clothes on. And Mom heard bath water running, and there's nobody there but me, her, and my dad, and they were outside, and she was like amazed. She's like, what's she going to do, drown herself in it? And I went out on this porch and I said, I need to get some help. And they looked at me like, you don't need any help. you just need to get up and go to school. And I was like, I need to get some help. I want to check myself into the psych unit at St. Joseph Hospital. I could not believe I was saying these words out of my mouth. I know that if I would have chose to say them, I never would have, because I just never wanted to deal with any of it. So finally, they took me down to the hospital, and it was on a Tuesday. I told them this on a Sunday, and they took me on a Tuesday. And on Tuesday night's the Alateen meeting. And Mom had to leave for that, and Dad went to go to his AA meeting. And I sat in this emergency room, this little tiny room in there, for 4 hours. But before then, my mama did the sweetest thing for me. This lady came in there, and they always do this little intake thing. And they ask you why you did this and if you've thought about killing yourself and stuff. And my mom told them everything. I didn't even have to open my mouth. I just sat there and went, uh-huh. And it was funny because I finally got up in this room, and they took me up here, and they took my blood pressure, my temperature, and took my weight, and I hated that. And they put me in this, I went in my room, and I turned around, and there was like 20 kids standing at my door. And as soon as I turned around, I jumped. I was like, oh my gosh, I came to get away from all you insane people, and you followed me here. And all of a sudden, before I could even say a word, these kids are naming me off their names and going, what's your name? And I'm going, Michelle. And they just looked at me like, are you all right? And I was like, yeah, I'm going to go to bed. I didn't have any clothes there with me. All I had on was the clothes I came in my little Nike tennis shoes. And here I was in this room. It was big. It had a huge closet, enough to fit about 50 people in. And there was these two beds, and it was empty, and it was quiet. I shut that door, and there was dead silence. And it was nice for a while to hear that dead silence. But then there was this knocking in my head, and I remembered why I was there. I was there because I didn't like who I was or the person I had become. And about this time, this lady who had done my intake came in. She goes, you want to start all over again? And I said, start all over with what? I already told you everything. She goes, well, now that your mom isn't here to tell your life story, why don't you try it? And I looked at her, and I said, do I have to? And she goes, that's up to you. And I was like, that's a stupid question. No. And she looked at me, and she goes, I have a feeling you don't want to be how you are right now. And she looked at me, and she goes, do you hate yourself? And I looked at her for the longest time, and I started to cry, and I never cry. I wouldn't let myself cry. And I was bawling, and all I could say was yes. And she goes, no, you don't tell me yes. If you can get out the words, I hate myself, I'll believe you. And I looked up at her, and I told her I hated myself. And she looked at me, and she goes, I don't believe you. And if you hate yourself, you're going to have to prove it to me in the next 30 days. The next morning, I met another lady, a little Italian lady. She's hilarious. And she was my counselor while I was there. And she had heard that I told everybody, they give you these little goal sheets, and you're supposed to take like 2 days to do them. I was there 5 minutes and done my first one, and was asking for my second one. And she looked it over, and she goes, these look like reasonable goals. I was like, yeah, I thought so. And I was such a smart aleck, because I wanted to get help, but I didn't want to admit that I needed it. I'm really sick, huh? And in the meantime, I didn't want anybody to know where I was at, because I had hid everything in my family from as many people as possible. And the only person who knew half of what went on in my house was one girl. And so I told everybody I was in the hospital because I had ulcers, which it was surprising I didn't. But I was finally allowed to have phone privileges, and I didn't want to call anybody. They made me call a friend because I was sitting there staring at the phones with a quarter in my hand, but would not call anybody. So I called her and I told her where I was at, and the first thing she said is, you don't need any help. Now, if I didn't have perfect enablers, I don't know what I had. One thing that I've always been able to do is listen to people. Even when I didn't want to, I listened to people. And for some reason, I was able to tell them something that could help them. But I was telling them all these things that could help them, but never applying them to myself. And this girl on the phone was crying, telling me about how I had helped her through so much. and here she didn't even know that I was in pain. And she started to beat herself up about it. And I said, why are you beating yourself up for? And she sat there and she was quiet for a while and she goes, because that's what you would do if it was me. And I lost it. I hung up the phone and went to my room and I just bawled. And this was 2 days in a row I cried and I was like, geez, losing my reputation here. First, I didn't want any of my family to come and see me, but I had to let my mom come and see me. And my poor mom, she really had to put up with somebody who was unhappy about not where she was. She was glad where she was because then she didn't have everybody else around her. But every day before my mom would come in, my counselor would come in, she goes, you ready to talk to your mom? And the first thing I had to ask her was, how's my mom? What's been going on? Is she okay? And she would go, no, no, no. And I was like, she's not okay. What? She goes, she's not here yet, and it's none of your business if she's okay or not. And I was like, what are you trying to tell me? My mom is coming to see me. I don't get to see her every day now. And you won't even tell me she's okay. And she goes, whether she's okay or not, you're here to take care of yourself. And I tell you, talk about making me mad. I just looked at her and I said, so what's your point? And she goes, if you sit here and worry about your mom and your brother and your sister and your dad the whole time you're in here, you're going to be worse off than when you left, when you came in here, when you leave. And I was like, no, I won't. And she goes, then prove me wrong. And then it worked. Me and my mom argued for the first seven sessions. In the first seven sessions, I walked out with my little pink blanket slamming the door. And the reason I'd run out of that door and slam it was because I didn't want to see my mom crying because I didn't want her to see me in pain. And I'd run to my room before anybody else could see me because I didn't want these people to think that I couldn't handle talking to my mom. And these people knew better. I mean, I'd go in there and I'd turn my radio up real loud so they couldn't hear me crying. And so they knew as soon as my radio went up loud that I was crying. And you'd hear about 20 knocks on the door going, what's wrong? I don't want to talk to you. Get away. And they had these nice little things called group, and they were for 2 hours every day. And they'd sit in there, and for a while I wouldn't say anything. And all of a sudden I had this urge to talk. And I was like, I wasn't making myself talk, and I wanted to talk. And that was new. I wanted to talk. I wanted to say how angry I was. I wanted to let these people know that I wasn't this steel person I made myself out to be. And these people were shocked. They were like about fell off their chairs. And I talked and I talked and I talked to my counselor for the rest of the day. We were both bawling our eyes out like little babies, but that was okay. It's what I needed to do, and it's probably what I still need to do some of today. I swear, I've been talking about this for a while, but this is a major turning point in my life, is when I went and got help, because I was just as bad as these alcoholics. And I have to say this, a lot of people who are in AA have really helped me through a lot, because going to open AA meetings and talking to people in AA, I've been able to let go of a lot of resentments that I held against my father especially, and against my mom, and even against my brother, my little muffin head. And I don't know, it was just amazing. I was saying things, and I didn't know where they were coming from. I was feeling things I never felt before. And it didn't bother me. It was new, and it felt good. And I wanted more of it. Well, by the time I got used to this nice, safe place, and was getting a little bit used to feeling happy and not feeling guilty about it, my 30 days were up, and I was history. And I didn't want to go. I said, I'll kill myself. And they go, you're lying. I said, well, then I'll run away. And they go, where are you going to run to? They knew I wouldn't go anywhere. They knew I just didn't want to go home. So I took 3 hours to pack my bags and an hour to get out the door. And I would have stalled more if I thought I could. And I cried the whole way home. And my mom looked at me and she she said, "I understand." And that was the first time that I had heard my mom say something to me, and I believed her. Because I had always believed that there was a hidden message to everything that everybody told me. And she just looked at me and she said that, and she was crying. And I asked her what she was crying about, and she goes, "I'm seeing you live." And I just started to bawl. And it felt good to cry. I was glad that I was crying. And it was just weird. It felt good to cry, but as soon as I looked at that house, I've never seen my house as my house. If you ask me to describe my house, I'll tell you a black hole. And that's what I thought it was for a long time. And I looked at that house, and it wasn't a black hole anymore. It was a home. I didn't like it, but it was a home. I walked into that door, and nobody knew what to say to me. Nobody knew how I was going to react, and it was great. I had this control over these people. Then I was sitting there in my room for a little while, and I decided I might unpack my bags a little bit and figured out I was controlling these people too much, and I better get my butt to a meeting. And that's where I went the next day. And these people looked at me, and they couldn't believe the person they saw. I had changed. I wasn't lying to myself anymore, and I didn't hate myself anymore. And I wouldn't say that I loved myself yet. I wasn't that brave yet. I said I liked myself. And there's this guy named Jim. And every time I say I don't love myself yet, I dislike myself, he'd look at me and go, "Keep coming back, Michelle. You will." And I was like, "No, I won't." And sure enough, I did. And I don't am able to sit here and say that, yes, I do act sick and crazy. And yes, I do not like being in a home with three alcoholics every day. But nobody said life was easy. Nobody said that I got to choose which home I came into and how my life was going to be. All God does is let me live my life each day. And as long as I'm making some steps and making it better, then I'm doing it right. I started going to meetings, and I was afraid not to go to a meeting every day. And then I ran into these people through my brother, and they were in AA. And I started going to open AA meetings with them. And I was listening for once, and I was listening good to these people giving their leads. And I heard my dad speaking to these people. I heard my mom, and I heard my brother, because it was all alcohol. It's all the same thing, just in different people. And one by one, not even meaning to, these resentments were going away from me. I didn't resent my parents for bringing me into this world anymore. I didn't resent my parents for being the way they were when they were drunk. And I didn't resent my parents for even yelling at me anymore, because I had some understanding for once. I mean, you would think, I've been coming to ALA team meetings since I was 6 years old. And finally, when I was 16 years old, I was able to let go of some of this. 10 years to let go of one resentment and mean it. And I gotta tell a story. That year that I turned 16, me, my brother, and my sister all spent their birthdays on the psych unit. We were called the birthday bunch. I mean, when they saw a McDonough on the list, they're like, "When's their birthday?" And we all had the same doctor, and he was like, "Not another one." But when I was not feeling anything, allowing myself to feel anything, and I was sitting in those beds, I started to really look at myself. But I was only looking at the bad things. And when I came out of that hospital, and I started going to meetings and listening and talking from my heart, not from my head, I started to actually grow. And that was neat. Finally, I was growing and I liked it. And while I was growing, I was seeing changes in the things around me. There wasn't as much yelling. The violence was gone mostly.
And people generally didn't look at me and wonder, like, are you going to explode or are you going to laugh? And that was neat. I liked that. But all of a sudden, this fear came back of, now what do you do? And I had no problem doing the first three steps in this program, but I hate the fourth step with a passion. And I'll tell you, I did about 10 fourth steps this week. Not because I had to, not because I wanted to, because I needed it. And I like doing them now. I mean, I hate them because they make me look at myself, which is what I need to do. But I like to do what I write down, because each time I do one, I'm in a different mood. And each time I give myself a little bit more credit. And each time I look at more of who I am. And I can stand up there and say, the person that's inside of me, I'm proud of that person. That person lives today, that person wants to live tomorrow. And that person is going to make as much of today as he possibly can. But some days I don't want to do that. Some days I get up and I'm scared. And I don't like being scared, and then I have to admit I'm powerless. And then I have to go and tell somebody about it. And then I got to listen to them tell me, it's okay. And then I got to say, all right, it's okay. I've been lately feeling a lot of gratitude. Not for what the program has done just for me, but what it's done for my family. 2 years ago, my family couldn't sit in a car together and laugh. We laugh in the car now. We don't throw things at each other when we watch TV anymore. And I can look at my mom and dad, my brother and sister, and tell them I love them today and mean it. And I could never do that before. I miss my brother and sister when I don't see them for a while now. I don't even miss my stupid dog. Anymore. I don't look and see the sickness anymore. I look and see people there who hurt just as much as I do some days, and have to struggle just as much as I do. And I have compassion for them. And my sister, she closed up on me and she wouldn't let me in for a long time. And she's opening up now, and I'm like so overjoyed. My brother, we got so close and then tore apart when he started using drugs because I couldn't handle it. We talk to each other now. We give each other hugs in public. I go up to my mom now, and I can go up, and he can stop hiding behind the piano. I go up to her in public and hug her and laugh with her, and I like it. I like being around your mom. And then dad, I love it when I see you at the mall now. I don't run from you. I can actually talk to my parents and like the conversation and like to talk to them and look at them and see the difficulties that I never saw before. All I saw was the monsters. But a little every once in a while, I get too emotionally involved in what's going on between my parents. It's a big surprise, huh? And I have to separate myself from them. Because I have this thing where I let my mom, and I do it too. One day we're best friends, and the next day she's my mother. And that gets confusing sometimes. And that's hard. After being so emotionally involved in it, I have to, when they start to fight, I walk out of the house. Not because out of rage, I walk out of the house and say, good job, myself. When my brother and sister get in a fight, I walk out of the room and I don't get in it anymore because it isn't my problem. I don't like it. And I sit here and I'm going, God, praying to the Lord. And then if that doesn't work, I say it again and again and again. And then I go down to the steps. And I never used to like the steps too well, but I'm starting to like them more each day because they don't make me hate myself anymore. I'm one of these people where I don't like the way I look. I think I'm too fat. And I always will. I never liked my physical appearance. or anything like that.
I always push myself to the farthest limits. They're more reasonable now. And I don't always mean to do that. It's almost like instincts. But I don't sit here, and 2 years ago, it was funny, I put on my dress today, and somebody said that I had a nice dress on. 2 years ago, somebody would have said that, I would go, well, what are you saying that for? And I was like, thank you. I got this counselor, and she tells me every time somebody gives me a compliment, I say thank you, and I mean it. And I hate that. But it's working. I don't hate compliments anymore. I actually like them a little bit, as long as they don't get to my ego. And I don't know, I feel better. I'm not as nervous. I came to three of these Al-Anon conferences here. And the people here, you get so close to these people, then you don't see them again the rest of the year. And you miss these people. I miss these people. Except for the people from Parkersburg. They'll see me Monday. But I go home, and the first time I ever came to Jacksonville, I cried the whole way home. Because these people that I got so close to, I couldn't talk to them every day anymore. And me, I'm too lazy to write. And I get so close to these people here, and every single person that I've ever met at this conference has helped me in some way. Some of them by talking to me, some of them by telling me I have a bad attitude, which I have at some times, and some of them just by just telling me their name and not talking to me again the rest of the conference. I don't know. I never imagined I would be up here telling this many people about myself, admitting that I am afraid of a lot of things, that I am a very insecure person. I never imagined I would have the guts or I'd allow myself to do that. It's like amazing, and I'm glad I did. But I think there's one dumb thing that I might have done along the way here. Last year, I met this guy, and this guy was driving a motorcycle and came from a dysfunctional family just like mine, and that was just the greatest escape route. And this guy kept on coming around and coming around, and he saw me glow up, and he saw me mad, and he just kept on coming around and coming around, and I was like, is he insane or what? And I stuck with this guy for a while now. He's in the army, and he's changed. He now goes out, and he's drinking every day. He hasn't said he's an alcoholic yet, but he sure is progressing like one. And that hurts, because I know I am A, powerless over it, and B, it isn't my place to try to take power over it. I've always seen people who are already in the full-fledged parts of the disease trying to battle with it. I've never watched anybody go from not to there, and it hurts. And a week before I came down here, I checked somebody into a treatment center, somebody I've become very close to. After having 6 years of sobriety, she went back out. And that was weird. It hurt. I wasn't disappointed in her. I wasn't mad at her. It just hurt. Because it was a reminder, and it was a damn good one, that I am not powerless over alcohol. And I need to be reminded of that every day. I need to remind myself that I'm not powerless over anything. That the only thing I have the power to do is take care of myself each day. And that was a hard lesson for me to learn. And I'm still learning. And I hope I don't stop, because I got a lot more to learn. I'd like to say something else, and I brag about my brother, and I probably shouldn't do this. My brother, when he came into this program, was 13 years old. He's now 14, and he has over a year of sobriety. And I'm so proud of him, it isn't even amazing. I'm his ego for him, I think, half the time. And for some reason, watching him gives me a lot of faith, because here is a kid who, he's the one who's out there trying each day saying, I don't need to take a drink. He's the one that has the real battle. And here I was complaining all these years. Kind of ironic. But that boy gives me more courage to go on each day than I know of. My brother is also a diabetic. And right now they are not letting me eat any sugar, which I hate. I miss chocolate bad. Because they're afraid I'm turning into a hypoglycemic. No surprise, they're all through my family, but that scares me. And each day I say I'm powerless over it, which I still don't like. And it just seems like one after another things are coming up, and they don't seem to be as big of hills as they used to be. Fights don't seem to matter who won or who didn't anymore. And I like that. I like knowing that I can walk away from a fight. I like knowing that I don't have to worry or do anything else except to take care of myself each day. I love that. I am just so amazed at what has happened to me because I let go of it and just let God and this program help me. And I kind of wish now I would have done it before I did. But just like they say, it takes every drink to get an alcoholic to AA. It took every yelling, screaming match for me to get well. And if I wouldn't have went through what I did when I did, I would probably not be here. And that's a scary thought. I see so many people I know out here and it's like... But... I want to especially say something in the beginning here, because when they first met me, I was a little bitch. At least Carrie had the same kind of personality as I did. I was going to make you laugh so you couldn't see what was going on with me, and I like that. And but you would make me laugh and make it, so what's really bugging you? And Megan, she's just this warm person. I don't think she's crazy. She's like, it's always nice to everybody, and I can never be nice to everybody. And she would always be nice to me, and I always thought she was a snob. And so I'd just be like, yeah, hi. Like, and then, like, towards the end of the weekend, I, like, started to like her. And then the next year I came back, she talked to me, and I got to talk to Carrie again. And they really helped me through a lot. They helped me open up. They talked. And I could see where they were coming from. I could see where all you guys come from, too. But you know how it is. And they really helped me a lot. And as a matter of fact, if it hadn't been for Carrie opening her big mouth, I wouldn't be up here. And I'm glad I'm up here. I'm glad I told you guys this. And I hope I helped somebody out there. Because... Yes, I'm supposed to be giving this week for me, but it isn't worth it unless I get to help somebody else. And I know I'm forgetting something, I can't remember what. I love you all. I love what you guys have given me. I love you the way you guys always welcome me back. And I love the way that you guys understand me when I'm mad, when I'm sad, when I don't want to do anything. You just look at me and tell me, look at the steps, or read page so-and-so. Or you'll just say, keep coming back and laugh. And that's the best one of all. And it's so weird because before I started to actually do something about myself, I would never talk to adults about how I felt. The only thing I told them was where they could stick it. And I'll find myself in Al-Anon meetings talking to these adults, and it's like, what am I doing? And they look at me, and they don't look at me like I'm a little brat. They listen to what I say, and they thank me for talking. Nobody ever thanks me for talking. Usually because I talk too much and don't say enough of the right thing. And I'm just grateful that you guys listen to me. He didn't kick me out of the meetings when I probably deserved it. And that you guys are here and you listen to me. And then nobody really had to get up and like run out of the room from what I said. I had a fear of that.
What are you guys laughing at?
But the only thing I do wish is that the people that I know, my friends, that are out there still trying to find the answer in the bottom of a bottle could see what I see right now. They could see this many faces sitting here, and they know how to live the right way. But all they see is the bottom of a bottle as their answer, and I want them to see what I have, but I can't give that to them until they're ready for it. And the only bad thing is that I have too many friends that are out there that are looking for answers in the bottom of the bottle, and I have to let go of each one of them every single day. But one day they will be up here too. One way or another, they will get here. Somehow, those who want to get help will. And I know that. Not because I think that, because God in this program tells me that those who want help will find it. And I believe that, because I have nothing else to believe. Everything else I believe just fell through. So, I wrote this poem once. And I don't remember it by heart. I meant to bring it up here, but I forgot. And it basically talks about, I wrote this poem about stabbing knives in each other's back. It was a little bit more poetic than that. And about how you can, when you're actually well enough, turn around and take these knives out of your back and reach out a hand to the person who stuck it there. To actually turn around with compassion and take a knife out and drop it on the ground and reach your hand out to this person. And I would have never, ever, ever thought anything like that if I hadn't met you people. And with that, I'm going to say thank you, and I'm going to close.